I'd like this morning to reflect on the Buddhist psychology teachings on feelings, which are in the Pali word is vedana, and I mentioned them earlier in the retreat, and that feelings in Buddhist teaching have a particular meaning, that there's a kind of a technical quality to it, and that is that with every sensory experience there arises a tone, a feeling tone, that's either pleasant or unpleasant, or the more literal translation is neither pleasant nor unpleasant, and it's been kind of shorthanded to neutral. So this has an important connection to the hindrances, which I spoke about yesterday, and some people have given feedback that those talking about the hindrances is really helpful, because when we recognize that, you know, the drivenness and the obsessive qualities of our thoughts and our, you know, our fantasies and, you know, different processes that go on in the body mind are coming out of these hindrances, these are the underlying kind of energies underneath those thoughts. You know, we don't so much look at the content of the thought and get caught up in the content of the thought, but have a more of an understanding of what's driving the thoughts and the fantasies and inner conversations and so on. So, you know, like recognizing that there are these energies of sense desire and aversion and delusion or sloth and torpor or dullness of mind and and restlessness and doubt. These recognizing that there's a kind of a universal characteristic that one can not so much get stuck in the content, but actually look more usefully at the nature of the drivenness. So actually, in this discourse that I've been teaching from the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha didn't actually get around to teaching the hindrances until the third foundation. So first establishing mindfulness in the body, and then in the ways that I've been teaching, and then secondly, mindfulness of feelings, and then only then mindfulness of mental states. And so feelings is kind of a preliminary understanding, because actually in our experience, the feelings come up before the mental states. And of course, I just want to add parenthetically that in mental states, it's not only these hindrances, but they're also very wholesome mental states that the Buddha talks about and that we can be cultivating and discovering in our mind. So it's not all, you know, it's not all bad news. It's just, you know, we're focusing on what's causing suffering. We're focusing on what's creating suffering so that it can be abandoned. That's the first, you know, kind of ways that we have to discover where there is, you know, the causes of suffering, so that we can let those go, and then we can also. It's not that we do only one and then the other, but when there's just a lot of suffering, it's hard to have space for the joy, the love, the generosity. It's complex. we're calling forth these qualities at the same time. But just in teaching, we focus on one thing and then another. And so, so feelings. So, in Buddhist teaching on the body and mind, the Buddha pointed out that we're taking in all kinds of information through our senses. You know, of course, we know that. Breaking that down and looking at it, so there's a sense object, so say a sound. So that sense object is sound waves that are created by the striking of the bell. And we need a sense organ in order to hear that. If there's no hearing organ, then, you know, if we're deaf, our ears are not functioning, the inner ear, then there'll be no hearing. So we need a sense object, we need a sense organ, and we also need what the Buddha called sense consciousness. And so he said there are different kinds of consciousness. So, the Buddha wasn't a neuroscientist. But it's kind of interesting that some of the things that the Buddha pointed out, or the ways he taught, are not inconsistent with what neuroscience is discovering about the brain and the body and how we receive sensory information. So again, if there's no sense consciousness, then the hearing consciousness, for example, then there's no hearing. So if for some reason the brain is impaired or the person is unconscious, then no hearing takes place. So we need sense object, sense organ, sense consciousness. And then when those three are present, an experience happens that the Buddha called sense contact. So sense contact means that there's a sense experience. And the Buddha said that co-arising, so arising at the same time with sense contact, are these feeling tones. And other things as well, which act upon one another. So another thing that arises is perception. I'm going to not talk about that right now. But feeling tone is this sense of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And so you might, when I ring the bell, you might experience that as a pleasant sound. That might be a pleasant sound. But the feeling tone is not necessarily inherent in the sound itself. So when you hear that sound at the end, toward the end of a sitting, or at the end of a sitting, and your knees are aching, and you're really feeling like you're ready to shift your posture, and you're waiting for that sound, then it's also influenced by perception. That's a signal that you can release your posture, and whatever is uncomfortable can be relieved. On the other hand, you might be in a deep samadhi, deep meditation, mind very collected, settled. And then when you hear that sound, there might be a slight unpleasant sensation or experience, feeling tone, because you know associated with that sound, everybody's going to start moving, and you just want to stay and continue meditating. So sounds or other sensory experiences can be pleasant sometimes and unpleasant other times, and other times neutral. Another example is if you've been standing for a long time, it feels pleasant to sit down. And then you've been sitting for a long time, it feels pleasant to stand up. So the body wants to move. So there's this continuum of experience, sense objects, sense organs, sense consciousness, sense contact, and then the co-arising of feeling tone with contact, vedna, and then when the mind clings to the feeling, which is pleasant, then from that feeling tone arises craving. So there's a grasping to hold on to it, to want more. So craving can also describe aversion when there's a resistance. So when the feeling tone is experienced as unpleasant and the mind resists, wants to push away or get rid of it or turn away from it, then craving is manifested as resistance or avoidance or, you know, wanting it to disappear, not be there. And so craving is that movement of the mind to grasp or cling. That craving, clinging is the next step, which I'll talk about in a moment. So that craving is at the root of the hindrances. So, and then clinging, which kind of is the next step, is when craving arises and we're kind of lost in it. So the mind starts thinking, wanting, not wanting, how am I going to get more of that, how am I going to get rid of that. So we're really caught up in the whole world of clinging. So actually, when we become sensitive to recognizing feeling tone, that's a very helpful space to cultivate mindfulness, because we can experience sensory experiences as pleasant without craving arising. We can experience sensory experiences as unpleasant without craving arising to get rid of it. We can just be open to the experience. I want to explore more the the actual experience of feeling tone, so that you, if you don't have a sense of it, that you can kind of get it, and we also feel, we experience these feeling tones in the body. So one place where feeling tone can arise is, this physical body sensation. So, right now I'm feeling, kind of traveling from my hip toward my knee, a little bit of soreness. I have some soreness in my hip, and it's kind of a chronic thing. And so, often I'm feeling it in the background, and it's unpleasant. It's unpleasant, not intensely unpleasant. The feeling tones can have a kind of a spectrum. There can be, a piece of hair hanging in front of your face, or a little itch that you feel on your skin in meditation, might be slightly unpleasant. And so then, we can just practice observing the unpleasantness of the sensation, and that arising with it, there's an unpleasantness. You might feel a little bit cold, right now I can feel my feet are a little bit cold. It's a little bit on the side of unpleasant, but I don't need to, cover up my feet. It's okay. You might feel a little bit warm, you might kind of want to, you might have a sweater or a shawl on, and you might want to, when you're in meditation, you might want to just say, "Oh, I'd be a little more comfortable if my shoulders were uncovered," and so I'm a little bit. It's a little unpleasant, this degree of warmth, and but maybe you can just be with it so that you're not moving. You're not disturbing your meditation. You're not disturbing, the people around you. And then maybe there might be just a much more intense feeling of unpleasant. It might be, just an intense pain in one of the joints, or a feeling in the pit of your stomach, you're going to throw up. And then of course there are even more intense pains than that, and so then this might call for some kind of action to either move your posture so you're not kind of exacerbating an injury that you might have, or if you feel like you're going to throw up, you leave the hall. So there are degrees of intensity, and then we moderate or decide what kind of action or non-action will happen as in accord with the degree. One of the ways. There's one teacher, a Burmese physician, who teaches meditation, who uses the word, the words like and dislike for pleasant and unpleasant. So that might be a little more accessible if you're having a hard time getting a sense of pleasant and unpleasant. You might look out at the window and see the snow-covered trees, and it might evoke a sense of pleasant. It's pleasant. You might appreciate the beauty of it. Or you might find it unpleasant because snow, maybe you have some kind of mobility concern. Snow is a difficult thing for you. So liking, disliking, it's a little bit more toward the kind of in the direction of craving, but it's not necessarily kind of caught in craving at that time. at that point, liking, disliking. So when we find ourselves in craving, and craving can be, you know, grasping or aversion, or it can be, you know, the dullness, the torpor is a way of kind of tuning out, turning off, becoming unconscious, maybe feeling overwhelmed by things. It's another feeling tone. Ignoring. And restlessness and doubt. Restlessness has a kind of, can have a quality of desire or aversiveness to it. There's certainly grasping and aversiveness in there, and doubt also has, you know, elements of grasping and aversiveness in it as well. Kind of always wanting something different. I think I need a different teaching, or doubting myself. Can I do this? It's a kind of aversiveness. So the fourth and fifth of the hindrances, you know, really have elements of the first and second in them. So really getting to know the first three hindrances helps a lot in dealing with the fourth and fifth. So when we notice that there's craving, kind of finding underneath that there may be a pleasant experience that somebody, something, you know, you want more of, like maybe after you had a piece of carrot cake at yesterday's lunch, you know, then you thought, oh, I want another one, you know, but you're already full, so. You know, so there's pleasant. You know, that was pleasant to eat that carrot cake. It was really good. And let me just notice what this craving feels like in the body. You know, what is this like to have this? I want more. I want more. I want more. You see some object, maybe an object of clothing that somebody's wearing, and you say, oh, that's really nice. You know, I'd like one of those. And then, oh, I have so many already. You know, or I don't really need that. And then just notice, oh, there's it's pleasant. I liked to see the object, and you know, and then there's the wanting. Or you take a walk in the snow. You know, that was so beautiful. I want to go again. Maybe I'll skip meditation and go out and walk in the snow. I want to repeat the experience again and again and again. I want more. I found the meditation difficult. I sit down to meditate and after 20 minutes, I feel soreness in my knees. It's unpleasant. So I don't want to meditate. I don't want to sit down. I don't want to experience that. So there's the unpleasant sensation, and then there's the pushing away, the avoiding, the not wanting, wanting to get rid of it. And you know, if meditation's an unpleasant experience, sometimes people just stop doing it. And so, you know, it's important to be quite open to the possibility that your knees might not hurt the next sitting. Sometimes these sensations just change because maybe we're more relaxed, or the body's adjusted, or we find a different way of sitting. So, and then of course there are mental experiences. So a lot of the craving, the clinging comes about because some thought arises. Maybe there's a sound, and the mind kind of connects to the sound, associates something with the sound, or maybe just there's a little, for whatever reason, a thought comes to mind, an unpleasant thought, a memory comes up, and it's a maybe it's a painful memory, something somebody said or did, your feelings were hurt, you felt misunderstood, and then the mind just is gone. The mind has gone into the drama, lost, you know, in a drama which is a state of suffering, you know, and it could be anger or it could be avoidance. Sometimes we go to sleep, or sometimes we start having some kind of other fantasy because we want to avoid the unpleasant feeling associated with the with the thought. So people are standing up. I think I'm putting people to sleep. So just noticing, going back and recognizing, oh, that thought, I felt it in a way that felt painful. You know, like, oh, there it was, that thought. It hurt. It's a painful memory. Can I just in my meditation, feeling it, feeling my breath, feeling the whole body, allowing that memory, which has a painful emotion associated with it, can I just let it resonate in my body for a few moments? And it's like, you know, a pebble. It's in the water. The ripples kind of go out. Pebble drops to the bottom. And then the water becomes still again when we just let it be, when we don't keep roiling the waters by throwing more pebbles in, but just let it be, and it settles. So that awareness of pleasantness, unpleasantness, can be very helpful. Pleasantness, it's not so much a problem when we find things pleasant. I mean, it's not necessarily a problem when we find things to be unpleasant either. It's only a problem when we push it away. But the pleasant, it's only, you know, if we can just, oh, there it is. I remember... these memories of early retreats, they're so strong because they're kind of these discoveries. You know, watching a sunset, it was fall, there was this beautiful birch tree, there was, you know, this amazing red, purple-colored sky behind the tree, And so, I was so struck by the beauty of it. And then as I felt that in my body, just also feeling the clinging, you know, that there was this, you know, kind of grasping at the moment. And I mean, and that's, you know, the epitome of futility, right? Trying to hold on to a sunset. So, you know, just really seeing it. Oh, yeah, suffering. And so just, you know, we can allow the beauty of the world to touch our hearts, you know, and know how transient it is, how ephemeral. And in a way, that can enhance the beauty of it, the preciousness of it, when we're open to that dimension. You know, the neutral experience, it's harder to really get a sense of, because the mind doesn't really cling to it, grasp it, or the mind doesn't react to it in the same way. The way we react to ephemeral, to neutral experiences is mainly that we ignore them. So for example, you know, without turning around, you know, do you remember the color of the wall behind you? So it's neutral. It's kind of a beige color, you know. We don't really take it in. It doesn't impinge on us. You know, if it were a brilliant blue or purple, or, you know, we'd notice it. But these neutral experiences, they tend to just wash over us. So the way we can be mindful of neutral is to, you know, really bring that kind of interested awareness to even unexciting experiences. So I like to invite you to notice as you move into your meditation and you're aware of sensory experience, remembering that experiences of the mind are also considered sensory experiences in Buddhist psychology, and so we can also have visual experiences as well as conceptual experiences in the mind, and even auditory experiences. Sometimes we may hear sounds arising that are not actually coming from the external environment. So to notice, like, you may react to them with grasping or resistance, and when you notice that, or if you notice that, or maybe you notice it downstream at the point of clinging, when your mind is kind of all worked up about it and making a plan to get more or how to avoid it, just maybe look back and recognize that there was a pleasant or unpleasant experience, or neutral experience maybe that put you to sleep, but more likely pleasant, unpleasant, that you're reacting to. And so becoming sensitive to that, and recognizing that, you know, these pleasant, that you don't decide. We don't decide about whether we experience something as pleasant or unpleasant. It just is, it just arises in that way. We're not in control of whether we experience something as pleasant, unpleasant. It just arises with the sensory experience. And so just recognizing that, oh, it just arose with the sensation, and it comes and goes. It comes and goes. We don't need to crave and cling and react and get all caught up about it. So let's explore that in, as we sit now. Thank you.